You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Gonna start this week's show with a couple of callbacks. First, a call I made, something I saw coming early in the pandemic, and then a call a listener made. What did I see coming? I made a prediction based on what we knew about transmission in March of 2020 that glory holes were going to make a comeback. And I was right. A couple of months after I said on the podcast, we could be entering a second golden age of glory holes. Health departments across North America were urging people who couldn't go without dick to get the dick they needed at glory holes. A lot of people got a lot of things wrong at the start of the pandemic, from the NIH and the CDC telling us we didn't need to wear masks, wrong, to the then president of the United States telling us it was all going to go away like magic, wrong. But I got glory holes right, and I am never going to stop spiking that football. And no ulterior motive. My dick has never gone into a glory hole. I wasn't promoting glory holes. My mouth has never been on the other side of one or even anywhere near one. I like dick. But ghost dick, disembodied dick, not for me. Another call made early in the pandemic, a listener had a call that he wanted to make. Well, more of a dream he had. With all of us locked in our apartments and houses, with everyone having been ordered to stop hooking up with strangers, with bars and clubs closed, did we not have a chance, a rare opportunity to eradicate sexually transmitted infections? Not all of them, obviously. Herpes, HPV, and HIV weren't going to disappear during the 1 or 2 months, 3 tops, it was going to take to bring the pandemic under control. But gonorrhea, syphilis, chlamydia, if everyone who'd been recently exposed stayed home until they developed symptoms and then sought treatment and took their meds before getting out there again after the 1 or 2 months it was going to take to bring the pandemic under control, 3 months tops, we could eradicate 3 of the biggest STIs. Yeah, that didn't happen. STI rates at their highest numbers in U.S. ever, The Guardian reported on Friday. There was a slight dip in STI rates at the start of the pandemic for obvious reasons, but that dip didn't last. From The Guardian, experts have called the rebound of STI cases and the projected increase in infections the result of a perfect storm of sluggish STI testing, changing behaviors as pandemic restrictions are lifted nationwide, and persistent problems around STI education, falling condom use, and a weak public healthcare infrastructure. So, yeah, that didn't happen. We didn't eradicate STIs during the pandemic for the same reasons. We have the lowest life expectancies compared to other wealthy countries, and the highest rates of avoidable deaths and suicide and diabetes, and double the maternal death rate of other wealthy countries, all while spending more on healthcare than any other wealthy country. It's almost like we're doing it wrong. I'll admit, I allowed myself to hope that my caller might be right, but I guess I momentarily forgot where I live. People without health insurance, or people with inadequate health insurance, people without easy access to primary care, they weren't able to access the doctors they needed or get the meds they needed at the best of times. With people out of work and trapped at home and broke, yeah, no way were we going to catch all the infections that had already happened before the pandemic. Lots of people with STIs don't have symptoms or don't realize, for example, the sore on their penis is syphilis and not something they did to themselves, beating off too much, home alone during the pandemic. And then the sore goes away and they forget about it, but they're still infected and still infectious. If people had easy access to docs and meds, if people had regular STI screenings and could access treatment easily, we wouldn't need a once-in-a-century Hail Mary pandemic to bring down our STI rates. We wouldn't need that if we had what other wealthy countries have, which is healthcare for all. But let's not lose sight of one of those contributing factors, The Guardian cites, changing behaviors as pandemic restrictions are lifted. That's a reference to the Whoring 20s, which have arrived. Have fun out there, everybody, but be responsible. If you can get screened, get screened. If you've got an STI, let your partners know. get yourself treated and wait until you're cured and can't infect someone else, or you're on your meds and your viral load is undetectable, if we're talking about HIV, and you can't then infect anyone else, or wait until you're on your meds, if we're talking about herpes, and far, far less likely to infect someone else. Turns out the pandemic lockdowns weren't the magic bullet that could take down those STIs, the big three, the other big three. We're going to need a decent and just and humane healthcare system to do that. And since we're not going to have that in the U.S. anytime soon, it's more important than ever that we look out for ourselves and our sex partners to the extent we can. Test, treat, disclose. And finally, before we get to your calls, we got a lot of feedback about our sex success stories. Turns out half of you hate them and half of you love them. It's generally not a great programming choice to start a show with something that half of your listeners hate before getting to the stuff, the Q's, the A's, the guests that everybody seems to love. So we're probably going to phase out the success stories. But I still think it's important to hear every once in a while from people who aren't having problems. Only hearing from people having problems skews the sample, skews perceptions and people's expectations. I mean, if you only hear about threesomes that end in calamity, you're going to think all threesomes end in calamity. So I'd like to run the occasional call from a listener who doesn't have a question about the threesome they just had because it was a success and they just want to spike the football themselves. But we'll run those calls every once in a while, not every week. Okay, coming up on today's show on the Micro and Magnum Savage Lovecast, my mean lesbian boss, Tracy, drops in to talk about lesbian haircuts. And on the Magnum Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savage.love, more calls, more questions, more guests, no ads. Amp Pup Amp, co-host of What's the Safe Word, the YouTube channel, returns to talk about dog training with us. Human dog training. All that coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Calm, the number one app for meditation and sleep. For a limited time, my listeners get 40% off a Calm premium subscription by going to calm.com/savage.
Dame Products is a woman-founded company that makes toys for sex. Developed and tested by real people, their innovative, doctor-approved products for pleasure are designed to enhance and enrich all kinds of sex. Visit dameproducts.com/savage to see what they can bring to your bedroom or wherever, you know, you do it.
This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by omgyes.com, a website dedicated to getting scientific truths out about women's sexual pleasure. Savage Lovecast listeners get a special discount at omgyes.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 42-year-old woman living in New York City. I got married 3 years ago at the courthouse to a wonderful man who I love very much. And we just recently, 2 weeks ago, had our actual wedding celebration. We couldn't have it before because of COVID and I was moving to New York from Florida, etc. And a week before our wedding, he planned to go out down to Medellin with his buddies for a bachelor party. And of course, sex work is very common there. And I was aware that some activity with sexual workers was going to be going on during that week. And I was fine with that. I didn't have a problem. It was a don't ask, don't tell situation. In fact, I joked with him and said, my only request is do not get COVID and do not get anybody pregnant. And we kind of laughed about it and we each went our separate ways and we got together after his bachelor party. We had the wedding. It was fantastic. However, since we've been back to New York, I've been having this like very strange feeling that I can't shake off. And it's not that I'm upset that he was with sexual workers. It's kind of like I feel that he got a pass to enjoy himself and go and have sex with other people and meet other women and have a blast with his friends. And I was essentially with two girlfriends at home getting drunk and having a night of laughs. I thought about it and I have this feeling like I kind of want to get revenge of sorts. Is that normal? What kind of revenge is, or why is this feeling coming out right now. It just doesn't make any sense to me, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about it.
You may not have realized it then, but you gave your now husband permission to do something, to mess around with somebody else in a controlled circumstance, that you would like permission to do yourself, mess around with somebody else in a controlled circumstance. And rather than just asking for that, or rather than even putting that on the table, when you gave him his DADT permission slip, when you gave him that hall pass, your subconscious mind, I think, is framing it as some necessary step to even the scales, to take revenge. He got to do this thing that is, I guess, regarded by many people as quote unquote wrong, but kind of winked at, the bachelor party, fucking around with sex workers. And you didn't get to do a similarly wrong thing. And some part of you, some part of your erotic imagination, I think, has latched onto that. And you would like to do something wrong, something that you're not supposed to do, but with his permission, in the same way he got to do that wrong thing with your permission. He got to do that wrong thing knowing that if it got back to you somehow, you weren't going to dump him. You weren't going to call off, well, I guess the wedding had already happened. You weren't going to call off the celebration of the wedding or divorce him. You'd like the same for your erotic autonomy. You'd like the same permission. I would be on guard against framing this as retaliatory. Maybe that's just something small and petty that you keep to yourself if you talk to him about this. And I think you should talk to him about this. Don't frame it as revenge. I gave you permission to do this thing, and therefore now I get to do something that maybe he's not comfortable with you doing. That would be unfair, I think, on his part. But you didn't frame it for him as, okay, I'm going to give you permission to go do this. Here's your hall pass, DADT, on the condition that I get the same from you. So you're going to have to negotiate that with him retroactively. Maybe he's going to have a hang up about it. Maybe it's going to take him a little bit of time to get there, but I think he can get there. I hope he can get there. But don't frame it as retaliation. Frame it as desire. You're going to want, every once in a while, you're going to want to take a walk on the wild side too, yourself. You regret not having a male stripper at your bachelorette party. And so you're going to schedule that. And you want to make sure that he's okay with it before you do. Just like he made sure that you were okay with what he was going to do before he did it.
Hey, Dan, I have been dabbling with water sports lately. Actually, I like to get fucked until I piss. The thing is, doing this in the shower, doing this in the bathroom gets to be a little tiring. I bought some foam pads to lay down on the ground to kind of make it a little bit more comfortable, but I want to be able to lay in the bed and get fucked and just piss a little bit. And I tried just using towels to sop it up. And I still found myself having to get up and like change the towels out. I don't know if I want like a plastic sheet to lay on. I don't know if I want a kiddie pool. I just want to be comfortable and wet at the same time. Oh, and I should add, I don't really enjoy being wet either. I don't want to touch it. I just want it to kind of go away magically. I don't know if I could get maybe a drop cloth. I'm thinking of going to the Home Depot, but I'm not sure the employees could handle that question.
So you want to be covered in piss, but not covered in piss. You want to get all wet, be comfortable and wet, but not actually be wet or lay around in your piss or have to jump up and change the towels. I don't know how to help you. Not a miracle worker here. You're basically asking, is there a way for you to walk on this water? And there isn't. There is a product designed primarily for women who squirt. Some women who squirt a great deal. A female ejaculate out can really soak the sheets, can soak into the mattress. There's a thing called a fascinator that you can purchase, the fascinator throw by Liberator. It is expensive, though. There are alternatives. You can get washable underpads on Amazon for your mattresses for less money. They're less attractive. They look a little bit more institutional than a fascinator throw does. But both of them, the washable underpads, the fascinated throws, can be tossed in the washing machine when you're done. And they're absorbent enough and plastic on one side, I believe, so it doesn't soak through to the sheets or the mattress, that your mattress and sheets won't get soaked. But I don't see how you avoid getting soaked if the goal here is to piss all over yourself when you're getting fucked. Traveling for the first time in a long time, new surroundings can make it hard to fall asleep. With Calm's sleep stories, you will fall asleep. You will be well-rested on your next vacation or your next work trip. We are partnering with Calm, the number one mental wellness app, to give you the tools that improve the way you feel. Clear your head with guided daily meditations, improve your focus with Calm's curated music tracks, and drift off to dreamland with Calm's imaginative sleep stories. And if you go to calm.com/savage, you'll get a limited time offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription, which includes hundreds of hours of programming, and new content is added every week. Over 100 million people all around the world already use Calm to take care of their minds. Sleep more, stress less, live better with Calm. For listeners of the show, Calm is again offering a special limited time promotion, 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/savage. Go to calm.com/savage for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I am a 30-something-year-old woman living on the West Coast and calling in with a question about my parents. They have been married for over 35 years, and at this point, their relationship is more one of convenience because it would just be too difficult to separate and also too difficult to make sure that they're staying alive and healthy on their own. And so at this point, especially my mom is just trying to figure out a way to stay married and stay sane. This becomes an issue with basically every holiday or birthday when my dad would love a greeting card from her and she's not able to find ones that have the messages that she's trying to share. There's nothing of a gushy romantic feeling she has for him at this point, and it definitely is not about how sexy they find each other. I'm wondering if you or any of our listeners have any recommendations for greeting cards that are not the greeting card industry of greeting cards. I'm sure there's others out there who would love this sort of thing.
Are you really so sure? Are you really sure there's lots of other people out there who might be interested in this question? Because, yeah, I don't think so. I think that most other people out there listening to the sound of your voice, caller, having just listened to the sound of your voice, now listening to the sound of my voice, are aware of the blank greeting card phenomena, that there are blank greeting cards for sale. I believe the greeting card industrial complex cranks out probably as many blank greeting cards as they do mushy-gushy greeting cards. They're usually for sale right by the mushy-gushy ones. Get a blank one. Get a whole crate of blank ones. Well, probably not a whole crate. Parents have been together 35 years. Your mother probably doesn't need that many more greeting cards to get your father through birthdays, anniversaries, and holidays between now and his or her death. But get her a few. Get her a few packs of blank greeting cards, and then she can write down something from the heart. And if her heart is empty, if she's just not feeling it, if there's nothing nice she wants to say to your father, well, that's where the pre-scripted, pre-written, gushy greeting cards come in. She can just give him something that says something that she doesn't quite feel or doesn't feel anymore, and let your father bask in the glow of that bullshit greeting card that he'd like to receive on those special days. But yeah, I've never gotten a question like this before. I don't think I'll ever get a question like yours ever again, because I don't think this is really an issue that anybody else but your mother and father, if this question is for real, face.
It's no secret that shame-free sex and pleasure are powerful avenues to deeper connections and an overall sense of well-being. And accessible, expertly designed toys can play a big part in getting you there and making you feel more alive. Dame is a woman-founded company making the next generation of vulva-tested, vulva-approved toys for sex. Started by a sex educator and an engineering whiz, Dame develops their products based on research and feedback from real humans, meaning people like you. They're making better sexual experiences and more pleasure available to all. Dame's easy-to-use toys and accessories are made with body-safe materials and smart design principles, and they've earned glowing praise from the New York Times, the Today Show, and many more. Whether you're looking to shake things up with your partner or upgrade your self-care routine, they've got something for every nightstand. Even better, Dame offers a 3-year warranty and hassle-free returns within 60 days, so your satisfaction is guaranteed. Go to dameproducts.com/savage today for $10 off your order with Dame. That's dameproducts.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. 27-year-old gay man living in Portland. I've been with my partner about 2.5, almost 3 years, and our sex life has pretty much plateaued. For instance, last week I had to beg him for a simple blowjob, and getting sex is very difficult these days. We're not connecting as much as we were, and he's kind of chalked it up to having a low libido and just a low sex drive. He just thinks that this is kind of the name of the game when you're this far in a relationship. This is both he and I's longest relationship. This is my only second gay relationship, and this is probably his fifth or sixth. I think it's important to note that we're both bottoms, but he's been the top in our relationship. And so I've feared for a long time that he's not getting enough from me, or it's made me feel inadequate in more ways than one. He doesn't let me top him, really. The last time I did was, months ago. My birthday is in January, and the last time I really got to play with his hole was back in January during my birthday. But aside from that, he doesn't really let me play with it, and I know he used to date a guy with a pretty big penis, and that's always been an area of insecurity for me. So we've talked about breaking up. We've talked about sleeping with other people, and I think we're both too insecure to handle the jealousy and the things that come with it. I've suggested getting him on some sort of like erectile dysfunction medication. He may be on board with that, but he thinks that he's going to have to take it all the time because he's 31. So our relationship is kind of become not tumultuous. We have a good relationship. We communicate well. We just got a dog and we talk about living together next year. However, the sex is just not up to par and I'm not getting what I need.
Oh my God, I was so relieved when I got to the part of your question, your call, where you said you hadn't yet moved in with each other. Please don't move in with each other. I'm sorry to say, I think this relationship is doomed. If you're both too insecure to have an open relationship and you're incapable of meeting each other's sexual needs, or he's incapable of meeting your rather reasonable sexual needs. The last time he let you top him was January, 9 or 10 months ago, and you had to beg for blowjobs, and you're 2.5, 3 years, almost 3 years, you say, into this relationship. Yeah, that's a much steeper drop-off in desire and passion than most couples experience. You say also that your boyfriend's had 5 or 6 relationships. Well, I think I know the reason why your boyfriend cycles through relationships pretty quickly. If his attitude towards sex is that, you know, desire plummets, desire tanks after a couple of years, well, then he's going to cycle in and out of a lot of relationships. He's going to have a lot of short-term relationships that could be successful short-term relationships if he knew himself better, if he entered them saying to people, I'm good for a year or two, and then it's open or out. It has to be open to get our sexual needs met, because after 2 years, I'm not going to be interested in you sexually anymore, or it's going to have to be over and we're going to have to move on to new partners. If indeed that's what's going on here, he's a fray sexual. That term has come up a lot lately. Maybe your boyfriend is a fray sexual and he hasn't embraced that identity, that self-understanding, and isn't conducting himself and running his relationships accordingly. If, on the other hand, the issue is that you're both bottoms and he's sexually unsatisfied in this relationship, well, there's a way that two bottoms or two tops can be in a successful, long-term, committed relationship. And that's to verse it up if they want to stay together and be monogamous, or that's to open it up to others, you know, to the occasional guest top or occasional guest bottom, as the case may be. ED meds, not the cure you think they're going to be. ED meds are something that men take when they are horny and they can't get hard, or they're having difficulty obtaining and sustaining an erection, as they say in the ED ads on cable news. You don't take ED meds to get horny. You take ED meds because you are horny and you want the hard on to follow through with that horniness, to drive that horniness home, to make that horny point to your partner that you desire them. The desire is there. The meds don't induce desire. They enable performance. So getting your bottom boyfriend on ED meds is not going to make your bottom boyfriend want to bottom for you more than your bottom boyfriend wants to bottom for you now, which is not very much. So you two are going to have to get a little brutally honest with each other. He's going to have to answer some tough questions that you're going to put to him about why he's been in six shortish, long-termish relationships and why all of those relationships ended. And if they all ended because after a year and a half or 2 years, he loses all desire for the person that he's in a relationship with and the sex stops and that's why he got dumped all those times or he had to end the relationships all those times because he didn't want to meet their needs, okay, well, then you know that this is at an end. But if he's sexually dissatisfied because he's a bottom, you're a bottom, you're topping him, it's not great for him, whatever the issue might be, if he's really sexually dissatisfied and you aren't able to meet each other's needs, but you want to be together and you do love each other, well, then you're going to have to bring in special guest stars who are capable of meeting needs that he can't for you and that you can't for him. And sometimes people have a problem with that. They look at that and say, oh, okay, well, we should obviously break up. If we can't meet each other's sexual needs, basic, major sexual needs, we have to end the relationship. Well, yeah, you can think of it that way. And that may be how most people would approach it. Most people would end the relationships. I've known people, though, loving, wonderful couples in long-term relationships who couldn't meet basic fundamental sexual needs. And they had other partners for that. And that was one way, if you think about it a little differently, that the two guys in a relationship like that, or the man and a woman in a relationship like that, were able to meet each other's needs by joyfully and happily allowing for the outsourcing of those needs. Sometimes you meet a partner's needs by letting someone else meet your partner's need. But if you guys can't do that, if you can't wrap your heads around that, this is doomed. Please, please don't make what to me right now seems to be an inevitable breakup harder or more complicated than it's already going to be by making the mistake of moving in with each other at this stage. It is a sad fact, it is an indictment of our culture, that so many of us, especially young people, learn about sex from watching porn. And although porn can be fun, if you really want to learn techniques that will arouse your partner or learn about your own body, your own pleasures, and how to communicate about those pleasures to your partner, porn is not the path. I recommend OMG Yes. OMGYes.com reframes the topics of sex and pleasure in a new way by presenting brand new research findings. OMGYes scientists partner with Indiana University and Yale University researchers to ask tens of thousands of people what they discover is most pleasurable for them. And then they dig into the data, find the patterns and shared techniques, naming many for the first time, and they turn all of that wisdom into disarmingly straightforward and honest videos, animations, and data visualizations. We've gotten a lot of calls from people saying that they heard about OMGYes on this show and that going to OMGYes, watching the videos and the animation, looking at and taking in the data visualizations have really improved their sex lives. People really love OMGYes.com. I really love OMGYes.com, and you should check it out. See how much there is to explore at OMGYes.com. Savage Lovecast listeners get a special discount at OMGYes.com/savage. That's OMGYes.com/savage.
Hey, Dan. I know you don't usually cover topics like haircuts, but hear me out here. I told you when I first came out and my extended religious family was being stupid, and essentially you told me that, you know, I was afraid of offending them, and you said they should be afraid of offending me, and that times have changed, and we, you know, I need to live my life, essentially, which I really appreciate, and I took with me. And now I'm at a different sort of point where I've come into my lesbian identity and presenting more masculine, and I still have long hair. I really want to cut it off, but I'm terrified of doing my first, like, butch dyke haircut, and I am like hovering over the book appointment button on the internet, and I cannot bring myself to press the button. And I'm just terrified of what people will think. I'm terrified of being a cliche. I'm terrified of being so quote unquote obviously gay and in every space that I go to. And I think I am already obviously gay, but it's just, there's something about it that is really hard. And I just need a Dan pep talk again.
I don't think you need a pep talk from me about a butch dyke haircut. I think you need a pep talk from my mean lesbian boss who just got a refresher on her butch dyke haircut. Hey, Tracy, how are you?
Good. How are you? Good. I did just get a refresher.
Tracy and I work together on Hump. Tracy produces Hump. Everybody out there, Tracy's going to want me to mention that you should go to humpfilmfest.com. to get tickets for Hump's Greatest Hits Volume 4, to catch Hump 2021 in a theater near you, and to find out how to make and submit a film for Hump 2022. With that out of the way, I tried to call you earlier, and I caught you in your cliche lesbian haircut at the dog park, which is a whole other lesbian cliche. Do you have any words of wisdom or comfort for this woman who'd like to cut her hair short but is worried about looking like a lesbian?
Oh, man, I will try. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the big point that I took away from your call was you mentioned that it's, you're going to be cliche if you get this butch dyke haircut. But do you know what else is cliche? Lesbians who really want butch dyke haircuts who don't get butch dyke haircuts.
Because they don't want to look like lesbian. Or do they want to look like the kind of lesbian who got a butch dyke haircut? How is this not internalized homophobia? Like, I worry about looking like exactly what I am.
Like, that is also a look or genre of lesbian. And it's also just as obviously gay in most cases, just with non-butch dyke haircuts, you know? So you might as well just go with the haircut that feels good to you and that suits you best.
I don't want to terrorize you or upset you, but I'm right now looking at a photo of you on my phone in a majorette outfit with long flowing hair down past your shoulders. There was some point where you got your long hair cut off and got the butch lesbian haircut that I've always known you to have. What was that point like for you? Can you project yourself back into what this woman is experiencing right now as she is trying to make that appointment to get the dyke haircut, that at some point you had to make that same appointment?
I think so. I don't know if I made an appointment or if I just did it myself. I know exactly what photo you're referring to. I'm pretty sure you just randomly like to send that to me every once in a while out of the blue. The difference between that photo and my hair now is I look like, as of yesterday, 3 p.m., I was like drafted into the military. So there's a lot of hair missing from that photo now. But I think what I did is I don't actually remember a drastic moment of when I just cut it all off or shaved it. I think I might have just gone like shorter and shorter and shorter until it just was like made sense. Because that photo that you're referring to where I have long hair, that hair is only down because I had to do a photo for school, you know, and my parents probably threatened me and I better, you know, better put my hair down. Outside of that photo, my hair was in this like gross bun, like every day, you know. I was the other cliche lesbian that just never got the butch dyke haircut and always threw it up. And eventually I think we just went shorter and shorter until it wasn't there anymore, which was a nice, safe way to do it.
Let's talk as long time out queer as totally comfortable we are. I think this sense that people sometimes have where it's okay that I'm gay or it's okay that I'm a dyke, but you know, there's something not okay, or I'm not fully comfortable with being obviously gay or obviously a dyke, which is weird. You know, people who are out, people who are same-sex relationships, people who are out at work, out to their family, out to all their friends, will still worry about the judgment of, I guess, some stranger on the bus or the threat of violence from some stranger on the bus if they're too obvious. And yet, it's who you want to be. It's who you are. You probably, if you know, you're the kind of lesbian who wants to get all her hair cut off, you probably look like a lesbian or look like a dyke, obviously, even without the short hair. But right. Have you? But it is true. Actually, I'm reasoning myself into a corner here. It is true that sometimes a woman with very short hair gets grief for it from other people policing their gender expression, and not just homophobic policing, but sometimes transphobic policing. Have you ever encountered that as a woman with short hair?
Oh my God, are you kidding? I live like 3 minutes from a Home Depot that I go to, like, I experience this like every day. I think the butch dyke haircut is basically a sign that you always wear above your head that's like says I'm gay, you know, and you might get called dyke more and you might offend more people for whatever, you know, whatever reason. But you're also going to make it way easier for other lesbians who are into Butch Dykes hit on you at a bar. You know,
that's it's so like, important. Strike a blow for lesbian visibility. That's how we find each other.
I think the question, obviously, it's not like if you should do it. It's just, why are you having so much trouble actually making that decision to cut your hair? And I think to dive deeper into it, it really feels like if you're having that much trouble, maybe it's really because you are having such a hard time of letting go of a part of yourself. There is some kind of like loss there and some grief of this past self that was you. And then you can't really hide behind your long hair anymore. Like when your Trumpy uncle comes to Christmas dinner, or you run into some, you know, Trumpy guy at Home Depot, you can't just hide behind your long hair and pretend that you're not the Butch Dyke that you really are. And so you lose a little bit of safety there, and it does make you a little stronger, I think. I mean, you know, you stop putting up with shit more because you kind of have to.
It's interesting though. Sometimes you know, it's really letting go of a little bit of camouflage. And sometimes it's the people who are seeing through the camouflage who can be more aggressive. And often when you've let go of the camouflage and you've moved out into the world with a kind of like, yeah, I'm a dyke, fuck you attitude, you scare off people who might otherwise like think you're hiding and mm-hmm. you might then feel empowered to terrorize you a little bit because you're clearly afraid of attracting attention. And therefore they're going to give you that attention. But if you're like, come for me, come at me, they get the sense that, all right, this person is ready. And this person isn't yeah. someone I want to fuck with because they're not afraid of me. That's what that haircut says.
Right. And there's baby steps into that, you know, phase. Like I have plenty of queer friends who aren't ready to commit to cutting all their hair off, but they do have the, you know, there's certain looks that lesbians do to have like to live in both worlds.
On my show, hosted by a gay man, are you telling this woman to get a mullet?
Oh, God, no, never. No offense to anyone who has mullets, but I'm not promoting them.
Actually, I think mullets are hot on the right dude, just like everything. I mean, pirate shirts are hot on the right dude. Of course, mullets are hot on the right dude. One last thought about hair, though, and help me out here. I also wear my hair very, very short. I've heard it grows back.
Right, it grows back. There's, you know, take a chance. I think it'll feel really liberating for you to just cut it off and do it and just see, you know, it'll grow back and maybe just start a little bit, just shave one half of your head and flip your long hair over that. And then you can kind of flip it back and forth depending on where you're at, you know, and then maybe if it feels good to get recognized as your Butch Dyke self with your short sides and cut the other side off. You know, there's no rules. It's do whatever you want.
Take it from my mean lesbian boss, Tracy. Thank you for jumping on the phone and letting me terrorize you this afternoon. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the Tech Savvy at-risk youth. My sister just built a house next to a gay couple, and her daughter has a second-story window that looks out into the gay couple's backyard. I myself am a gay man, so she asked me, and now here I am asking you about this situation. And the daughter can see, her five-year-old daughter can see into this couple's hot tub, which has some rubber duckies and some floating dicks out of her window. So my sister is not quite sure what to do. This is their forever home they have just built. I imagine that this is also the gay couple's forever home. And my sister does not know how to approach this. I suggested maybe some frosted glass on her daughter's window, but I don't know if that would work. Maybe talking to the couple about getting a gazebo, but we would love to hear what you have to think and how best she can approach this situation in a place where she is going to be living next to these people for likely the rest of all of their lives.
Your niece is going to see worse eventually. You know, the kinds of guys who have a hot tub, the kind of gay couple that has a hot tub with rubber duckies and giant floating rubber dicks. I imagine these are big floaty dicks. I'm trying to picture the kind of rubber dicks somebody might have floating around in a hot tub. It seems to me that that kind of gay couple probably fucks around in their hot tub, or maybe has hot tub parties where groups of guys fuck around in their hot tubs. And if your sister's house is new, if it just went up next door, they may not be aware that the hot tub that was private, that couldn't be seen by the neighbors because they didn't have neighbors, can now be seen from the new house, from a window that wasn't there when they installed the hot tub and acquired the floating rubber dicks and duckies that populate the hot tub when it's not full of naked gay men. They might need to know that. I would, if I were your sister, just approach them and say, hey, we're the neighbors. Maybe bring a plate of brownies or cupcakes. Hey, we're the new neighbors. You know, our house went up, and as it turns out, our daughter's bedroom looks right out. The window looks right out at your hot tub. And so, yeah, just letting you know that you may need to, or we may need to, install some sort of privacy screen. A privacy screen that would be, ironically, erected to protect their privacy as well. I'm sure your sister doesn't want her 5-year-old watching gay men mess around in a hot tub full of dicks any more than that gay couple wants to be observed by a 5-year-old when they're messing around in their hot tub full of dicks. So the privacy screen isn't about shaming them. Hopefully they won't react to it that way. It's just about this new reality. A house went up next door. There's a window where there didn't used to be a window, and there's a child where there didn't used to be a child. And a hot tub that was, until this house went up, private, is no longer private. And something's going to have to be done. And we as neighbors, let's figure that out together. That's not your sister saying you can't have dicks in your hot tub. That's not your sister saying you can't have sex in your hot tub. You have dicks in your hot tub. I have a 5-year-old in my house. How do we live together side by side with your privacy protected and your right to fuck around like gay men in a hot tub when you want to, and my daughter's privacy respected too? All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read some listener tweets. Archie Visionary tweets, once again, Savage Lovecast whiffs it on an aromantic question. Ugh, Dan, please learn about eros. Some of us do want to be in relationships even if we can't love our partner. Close, intimate relationships don't require love, and you've probably fucked that caller over. All right, I'm a little confused by that tweet, but I reached out and asked Archie to recommend someone from the Eros community who can come on the show and explain it all to me. That'll be hopefully on an upcoming episode. Just by opinion tweets, thanks at Fake Dan Savage for introducing us to Justin Lay Miller on the Savage Lovecast this week. His sex and psychology podcast is a true gem, just like yours, Dan. I highly recommend his episode, What We Got Wrong About Bisexuality, a great treat for many of my fellow bisexual friends. And finally, Zach Hempel tweets, come on, Dan Savage, the answer to the question, is the 69 position still a thing amongst couples, is yes. Dan, how can you deny the ongoing existence of this very fun, though not always practical, activity? Well, I think the poll was flawed. My only options were yes, 69ing exists, and no, 69ing does not exist. Obviously, 69ing exists. People do it. I voted no because people shouldn't. And most couples, in my experience, eventually don't. Even if two people did it when they first met, 69ing really does tend to fall off the menu pretty quickly. Seems to me it's something people tend to do with strangers or near strangers when both parties are overwhelmed with lust and taking turns isn't practical because neither wants to wait their turn. The longer two people are together, the less frantic the sex becomes. Sex can still be good, it's just a different kind of good. And the less frantic sex becomes, the less likely two people are to awkwardly inhale each other's junk at the exact same time. All right, if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to include the hashtag #SavageLovecast. And now, listener response calls.
Hi, this is a comment on episode 782 for the inexperienced bisexual woman in a relationship with a man. I have a comment to both Dan and the caller. Dan, it felt really flippant of how you talked about the legitimate struggles of bisexual women in the dating pool. I'm a fellow bisexual woman living in a similarly lefty part of the West Coast as the caller, and I have had many queer and lesbian women outright tell me that they would never date me or have sex with me because I fuck men too. It is hard to date women as a bi woman, especially if you're inexperienced. And I think the caller needs to be realistic about the pushback that they're going to get from other queer women. Now, that said, to the caller, there's a ton of bi women in the dating pool. Dan is right. But it's also not a great experience for single bi women to be your experiment while your boyfriend looms in the background, making sure that you aren't too gay without him. If your boyfriend's concerned with your sexuality and the possibility of y'all being open, which you would be if you're having sex with other people, you need to run away. You even said that you need longer-term intimacy and trust to be sexual with someone, which your boyfriend is outright ignoring because he doesn't like the thought of sharing you with someone else. You'll never get the validation of your sexuality that you want and need with someone like that. And quite frankly, it's a huge red flag to other women who will want to date and fuck you. So in my opinion, dump the motherfucker already.
Hey, Dan. Paul, in the recent podcast about the guy whose partner blamed her lack of desire in his pot use, that sort of got me thinking that sort of maybe asking callers, to clarify if pot use is an issue in their relationship, they should, make it clear whether we're talking about smoking, whether we're talking about edibles, vaping, etc. Because, I don't partake. I've got no problem with pot. It's just not for me personally. I would not mind dating somebody who took edibles, or possibly even vaped. But pot smoke itself would be an absolute deal breaker for me. And I think that's actually a very relevant, very important detail. When somebody talks about cigarettes, the effects they're talking about. But if someone just says, I use pot regularly, then I can't but wonder, okay, well, are you just doing gummies? Are you smoking up and somebody else living in the apartment has to smell that? I think it's a very relevant detail. And I think it'd be nice if callers would specify when that comes up.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth. This is the response to the woman in episode 782 who was wondering if she was being too judgy when she hesitated to go out with somebody who has only recently been vaccinated. I agree with everything you said about poor judgment, but I think you missed the part where she insisted she's in the Bay Area. Global vaccine distribution has not been equitable and still is not. Lots of people travel for work and, like me, were stranded in countries where vaccines were not available until recently. I didn't get vaccinated until August of this year when I was finally able to go back to the United States. I live in a country where, until very recently, the only vaccine available was Sinopharm. I know a lot of people here who have reservations about Sinopharm that they wouldn't about a vaccine that is approved for distribution in the United States. So I think she should also ask him if there is some reason that he was in a country where it was not possible for him to get vaccinated until recently.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for next week's show or a comment about something I whiffed on this week's show? The best way to get us your questions and your comments is to use the Voice Memo app on your phone to record your question or your comment and then email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. You can also call us at 206-302-2064. We prefer those voice memos. The sound quality is better, but we swing both ways. Hump 2021 will be wrapping up its tour in November in Washington, D.C., Albuquerque, Tucson, Olympia, Washington, and Philadelphia. Grab a ticket now at humpfilmfest.com. And speaking of Hump, the deadline to submit to the 2022 Hump Film Festival is coming right up, December 8th. So now is the time to grab some friends and make your own amateur porn film. Go to humpfilmfest.com for all the info you need about attending a screening or submitting your own film. And a reminder, my new book, Savage Love from A to Z, is out now, so grab a copy anywhere books are sold. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Pup Amp on Twitter at Pup Amp. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian. And me and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth and Nancy will all be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.